All right, so we will turn to Mark Tufanen from the University of Ottawa.
Thank you very much. I'd like to extend my thanks to Kate Wachenbach. This paper and the broader project is part of a conversation that began, in fact, as Keith pointed out, in Geneva. And Keith very accurately described the first strand of his thinking or invitation to rethink histories of human rights by looking at the connections with humanitarianism as a project, as the one that specifically I look at from the perspective of interwar politics, and more specifically about interwar population politics. So I thought I would start, rather than summarizing the content of the entire paper, I thought I should first set this in a more contemporary context in order to try to ground this in something that is concrete, but at the same time to try to dispel criticisms about anachronistic thinking. So hopefully I won't commit any of those flaws. Imagine a territory that is rife with ethnic and religious conflict, where there are warring factions that seek to thwart each other's efforts to establish control and oust the incumbent government. The latter is no longer willing or is unable to ensure the stability of the situation or protect its citizens. From the ensuing struggle emerges a rebel leader with strong military backing. He rallies around himself large segments of the local population, which opposes both the nationalist aspirations of some groups to their own state, and the foreign occupation and military presence of troops whose sole proclaimed goal is to establish law and order. In return for the support of the population for the establishment of a new state or to rebuild an old one, the leader promises measures to ensure stability and security and to deliver public goods for the well-being of the populations. He also promises to bring democracy and human rights, but these are luxury goods that need to be postponed until the new government and the new regime consolidates its rule. Under the watchful eye of the international community, so the story goes, delegates in an international organization convene an emergency meeting to discuss the deployment of troops to limit the violence on the ground and to ensure the protection of populations at risk. It is even contemplated at some point to deploy a transitional civil territorial administration to assist emerging structures of statehood to achieve stability, to provide assistance, for example, in drawing up a constitution, build roads and infrastructures for health and public facilities, ensure certainty and security of private transactions between individuals. How should international lawyers like myself and historians like yourselves understand and make sense of these developments and experiments in what some scholars have called executive rule and post-conflict state-building processes? Now, this story is most, I would say, familiar to all of us, and we know that the contemporary examples of situations that have arisen are not uncommon, from the Congo in the 60s to Bosnia and Kosovo in the mid-late 90s, East Timor, late 90s, and most recently Iraq. This is a narrative that is fairly familiar. But what is less visible, I would argue, is the ways in which such practices of local and administrative and international rule have been justified. What is often overlooked is the fact that most of these practices are justified in the name of humanity, not necessarily in the name of ensuring and bringing individual and collective rights to the population. Now, this amorphous concept of humanity has informed a large range of practices in history that I argue have helped consolidate statehood and nation-building processes. And the specific example that I investigate in my paper and my work is the efforts made by Armenian nationalists to have their own state in the context of the interwar, and specifically the post-genocide period. So this would be mostly in terms of periodization from 1918 to 1923-24. What I've just described in terms of historical context is could be easily taken from a page from history by going back to 1922, and that is the example with which I begin the paper. The context of the discussion of the need to ensure in any future peace negotiations with Kemalist Turkey, the need to ensure an Armenian national home for Armenians. Now, what is fascinating is that at the time, the discussions were revolving around the single idea of humanity and not rights and justice. The delegates that were using this language were specific about the fundamental importance of ensuring a national home, independent or not, in the context of a nation-building project. Now, how should we understand the unfoldment of this idea of humanity in the context of the interwar? And specifically, what kind of genealogies do we draw between those kind of practices and modern conceptions of human rights? What I do in this paper and my larger project is look at humanitarianism not so much as a specific set of practices that are geared towards, for example, relief and rehabilitation work in the context of refugee resettlement, but mostly as part of a project that precedes resettlement, and that is the efforts made to ensure the existence and the coming into being of an independent state. Why have all these discourses revolved around the idea of humanity is perplexing for both of them. What I try to do is to argue that these invocations of humanity actually are rooted in a broader genealogy of what some scholars have advocated as being the Protestant turn to sentimentalist figures through different narratives, such as, for example, the work of travelers who have emphasized the suffering in certain parts of the world that they visited. So what Keith was saying earlier on, I'm trying to connect to